This is the most unethical sham since I've been in politics. And if you really wanted to know the truth, you sure as hell wouldn't have done what you've done to this guy.
Thank you, Senator Graham. And he's absolutely right. And that pattern of behavior continues even today, as we watch officials in Washington, D.C. playing political games with an aid package for the American people. Hi there, Mark Congleton here. It's The Daily Perspective. I'm your humble, or sometimes humble, host for this almost hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And I hope you're having a wonderful Thursday, the 26th of March, 2020. As life pushes forward in the United States of America and around the world, under the influence of the coronavirus, COVID-19, the Wuhan virus. It is a Thursday. It's actually looking like a nice day here. It was a beautiful day yesterday. And yesterday, while it was beautiful, I was busy. I was inside a building, inside of a studio suite with no windows to the outside world, and walked outside to beautiful blue skies and puffy white clouds, birds chirping, flowers blooming. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. And I had the drone in the back of the car. I was actually contemplating going someplace to do a bit o' droning and shooting some video, because I have this concept for something I would like to put together. And I remembered the drone was in the car about halfway home, a long, long way from the places I wanted to shoot video of. So that didn't happen. Anyway, that is the plan for today, though. I'm when we get through with this and I get the things processed, I have one more piece of work that I have to flesh out before I can leave, and then I'm going to leave the studio and take this my shaggy friend, Princess Kimber, the Wonder Dog. I'm going to take her along, and we're going to go for a ride and take the drone along and fly it above some places and shoot some video. That should be interesting today. And that will give me more stuff to be processing and put online. And I'll tell you more about that as it comes to a close, which shouldn't be too long. Probably not tomorrow, but probably Monday. How about that? And what else is there? Yesterday, I had an interesting Dawson Now session. I have never in my life had an issue with Skype like I had yesterday. And I wonder if maybe you've had this issue. If you have, please let me know. Please tell me if you have had this problem with Skype. The issue was that I could hook up to someone on Skype, and I couldn't hook up to someone. I could see them. I could see them there. It would show that they were online, and they could see the same for me. But when we tried to connect, it would say they weren't there. It was very strange. Yeah, it was very strange. And I am at a loss as to explain why this happened. I just, I wish I could explain why it happened, but I can't. I wish I could, but I can't. It's just really, really odd. Very, very strange. And hopefully I can sort that problem out. Now, we're looking at a different way of making this happen. And hopefully we'll work this out to a point where we can bypass it. There's another service we're looking at using. Zoom is something that's being used widely by a lot of people doing gatherings and online meetings and the like, and we're looking at that possibility as well. If that is a realistic possibility, then we will make that happen. That's something I've got to work on today, is Zoom. Have you had experience with Zoom? You think it's a good platform? It's something just technically I'm interested in. There's another option that I use that is something that broadcasters use and people like that. And that's another fallback. So if Zoom is not going to work well for us, if we try that and it doesn't work, then I've got another option, which is anytime you use an option like that, you send somebody an email with, this is how we're going to connect to you. And it doesn't matter how simple it is, because it's outside of their usual normal box, there's a million questions and the comfort zone is not there. And, the thing is that the method that I would use, and I'm not going to name the method here because honestly, obviously it's something that is really a professional product that if too many people are on it, it's going to cause problems. So I'm not going to name it here, but the thing is you issue an invitation, you send somebody a link. It's just like Zoom in that you issue an invitation, they get a link, they follow the link in their browser. They may be prompted to download a plugin or an add-on for their browser to make it work. And the next thing you know, bing, they pop up in the meeting. But it's not a meeting. It's something different. And it's not designed for meetings or conferencing or things like that. It's a real product used by broadcasters to connect studios together. And it uses the internet to do so. And it's crystal clear, unlike Skype. So we'll see if it comes down to it, we'll fall back to that. Wow, have I been just in talking tech stuff? Let's see how I'm 7 minutes into the podcast and 3/4 of you are gone already. Thank you. That's what I get. And you know why? It's because I'm messing around with something on the side and my mouth is just running. This is what's happening. My mouth is running while my hands and eyes are working on something else. And I'm blah, 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 blah. Whatever's on top of my brain is coming out of my mouth. That's what's happening here. Because I just looked over at the audio for the Facebook feed and it's really, really hot and I'm trying to adjust it and I'm really not coming up with a way to adjust it. And I don't understand why. Anyway, I'll putter with that during the break. How about that? But the good news is that podcast listeners, it's not going to affect you. And listen, there are a lot more podcast listeners than there are Facebook listeners, because we might have a tiny, tiny number of people who'll come together and listen live as it happens on Facebook. And they don't ever comment or check in. A handful from time to time do, hey, good to see you. I hadn't been here in a while, that sort of thing. But for the most part, it's podcast. And I've honestly thought about completely dropping the Facebook Live. But I have some stuff cooking on the back burner that's going to require Facebook Live or YouTube or something like that. So I keep playing with that in order to keep it active to be able to use it for the future. Okay. Well, let's take a look at the list of things to talk about today. What shall we talk about and what will we have time to get to? Well, there are, you've seen those charts and those graphs that talk about the potential numbers of casualties or deaths from coronavirus. So you see these things with these colored, look like little hills and stuff that they're overlapping different colors that show potentials and things like that. It turns out that all that data is coming from a website that's got a bad, bad history. We'll look at that coming up. It's inaccurate virus models, and those models are panicking some officials into doing lockdowns that probably aren't necessary. There's also the behavior of the news media itself. The progressive press cannot be trusted to tell you the truth. They can be trusted to deliver sensationalism for the sake of upping their viewership, their readership, or whatever. And an official in our government has said something about that. There is an expert who says we may be looking at a peak in coronavirus deaths coming up in the next few weeks, and we may be seeing the downhill side of it very soon. And if you have decided it would be cool to go out and walk into a drugstore and lick the boxes of sinus medicines and flu medicines and things like that just because you're a cool dude and you're going to show everybody how cool you are, you could be charged with terrorism. We'll look at that in a little while. And we'll start off with some fruit that apparently didn't drop too far from the tree. Nancy Pelosi's daughter has done something despicable, and it looks like she's getting kicked in the teeth for it online. Coming from the Western Journal, it's payback time for Pelosi poison. Christine Pelosi, the daughter of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, probably thought she was going to make friends and influence people with a Twitter post mocking the news that Kentucky Senator Rand Paul tested positive for the coronavirus. But judging by the storm of responses on Pelosi's own account, she just stirred up a gale of criticism directed at her and her powerful mother. As reported by Fox News, Paul's announcement on Sunday that he'd contracted the virus led to other Republican lawmakers who had contact with him deciding to go into self-isolation. One of them was Utah Senator Mitt Romney, whose decision sparked a Twitter post from Washington Post reporter Paul Kane, who wrote that Romney was going to be separated from his wife to avoid possibly infecting her. Romney's wife, Ann, has multiple sclerosis. Kane wrote, "He told us the other day, his biggest concern was not getting this because his wife has MS. Now he can't see her for almost 2 weeks." A personal story like that could have touched a heart of stone. But for Christine Pelosi, it was just a chance to respond with a snarky praise for the man who attacked Rand Paul in a neighborhood dispute in 2017. An attack that has left Rand Paul with serious complications that required surgery last year. She tweeted Sunday night, "Rand Paul's neighbor was right." The post has apparently been deleted, but the internet is forever. So there's a screenshot available. It's in the article. Get the show notes if you'd like to see it. It got plenty of attention. A lot of attention. Ashley St. Clair tweeted back, "This is Nancy Pelosi's daughter, saying that Rand Paul's neighbor who beat Rand to the point of breaking six of his ribs was right. This is aberrant behavior." But I guess the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it, Speaker Pelosi? Well, if Christine was expecting kudos from her liberal buddies, the blowback must have been stunning. But for an American tired of the Pelosi brand of vicious politics and the very real damage it's doing to the United States, the responses were gratifying. Another said, "This is disgusting, even for you." Someone else said, "Whoa, this is kind of sickening." Some called out Pelosi for sanctioning violence against elected members of Congress, like, say, her mother. So somebody said, "At Twitter, support is encouraging violence against an already attacked member of Congress acceptable?" Ooh. In fact, Twitter eventually did take the post down for violating its rules. Others mocked Nancy Pelosi's often repeated and rarely believed invocations of her applying her own Catholic faith to her political life. A guy named Caleb Hull writes, "Very prayerful and somber, just like your mother wanted." At least one even came from a self-described opponent of Paul, but one who could see that Christine Pelosi had crossed a line. Denise Mary said, "Hate his politics, but he has a family, colleagues, liberal ones, etc., and he does good things. This is beyond hateful." This is beyond hateful. The description was apt, but as other commenters noted, it wasn't exactly surprising coming from the Pelosi line. One says, "Christine Pelosi, evil must run in your family." Another says, "Stay classy, Pelosi family." But then, And there was another one that's a video that I can't relate to you, but to see a daughter of the hyper-political, power-hungry House Speaker debase herself by insulting a senator who's already dealing with a potentially fatal ailment should be surprising. But at a time when that same House Speaker has already debased herself and her country by waging a disgraceful war of resistance, including a ludicrous impeachment attempt that seems only more absurd now, viewed through the lens of a genuine national crisis, It's almost to be expected. Christine Pelosi obviously believes that politics is no game of beanbag, a lesson she learned at her mother's side, if not on her knee. Remember, this is a woman who watched with the rest of the country as her mother ripped up President Donald Trump's State of the Union address on national television and got resounding applause from Democrats in Congress. Where she went wrong, though, was apparently thinking this tweet attacking Paul was going to win her plaudits from her political allies. What she got instead was payback that was savage and richly deserved. This is the kind of thing I was talking about when I referred to the septic tank that is below posts on Twitter and articles in the media. This is the kind of hatred coming from the left.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Oh, really? Okay. Thanks for that, I think. Not sure, but thanks anyway. Hi there. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. I think I worked out my audio issue. So, if it weren't for tech garbage, I don't think I could do a podcast every day. I just don't understand. Why me? Well, we've just seen this example coming from Nancy Pelosi's daughter. And as I said before we went into the break, this is typical. This is typical of what you see coming from leftists. I have liberal friends in social media, people that I care about, people I love, people, they're friends of mine, but they're still liberals and they're buying the whole line. I saw somebody this morning actually posted reposted something from BuzzFeed, and BuzzFeed is notoriously bad at journalism. BuzzFeed has been proven again and again not to be a trustworthy source for your information, but because it tickles the right nerves in the leftist brain, people cling to BuzzFeed and they love repeating what BuzzFeed has to say, and that's a sad thing. It's a very sad thing. So I was saddened to see this particular thing requoted. And the comment below was that the president was such a narcissist. And it was because Trump said something about the Democrats wanting businesses to suffer to damage him in the upcoming election. Well, that's not narcissism. That's reality. Because we've been watching the Democrats try everything, anything and everything. They've been trying all manner of things to try to undermine the president any way they can. And this is just the latest example of that. They are trying as hard as they can to undermine his credibility, to damage his appeal in the public eye. And of course, they would love for businesses to suffer, for the economy to take a torpedo during this period of time so that they can send a message to their followers, the people who trust places like BuzzFeed, and tell them this is all the president's fault. He did a terrible job. When he was actually ahead of the curve, way ahead of a lot of people in different countries, on responding to this, he was ahead of the Democrats because the Democrats, when he started making moves to protect us from what's happening now, the Democrats were focused on impeaching him. They were trying to remove him from office while he was trying to protect you from the effects of the coronavirus. So yes, it is true that the Democrats would love to use a financial downturn in our economy against him. Even though most people, thinking people, realize that what's going on isn't that, they recognize the fact that we're all in this together, we're fighting it, we're doing the best we can, we're moving along. But they don't, and they don't see him as being responsible for it. The Democrats will continue this. Because even if they can't use it now, in a few years, when it's time for the next presidential election, in 2024, what they will say is, do you want another Republican president in office to tank our economy like the last one did? Now, I know hearing that makes something rise up inside of you like, whoa, wait, whoa, what? But that's what they'll do. Because that's what they've done in the past. They have a track record. We should pay attention to that track record. All righty then. So, I think it's time to move along. And since now we are actually talking about COVID-19. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. We're talking about the coronavirus. Well, those who spread the coronavirus intentionally may face criminal charges under federal terrorism laws. That's the warning coming from the Justice Department. Deputy Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen wrote in a memo to senior Justice Department officials, law enforcement agency heads, and U.S. attorneys nationwide that threats or attempts to use COVID-19 as a weapon against Americans will not be tolerated. Rosen explained that because coronavirus appears to meet the statutory definition of a biological agent, if there are cases of purposeful exposure and infection of others with COVID-19, then such acts potentially could implicate the nation's terrorism-related statutes. The Deputy Attorney General did not specify if there had been reports of any such cases, or if his memo was merely a precautionary warning. In addition, a task force has been established to deal with hoarding and price gouging of emergency supplies for the battle against the coronavirus, an issue alluded to by Attorney General Bill Barr earlier in the week when he said that hoarding of supplies, such as masks, would be prosecuted. However, the Department of Health and Human Services has not yet officially designated the products the administration wants covered by the Defense Production Act, according to memos issued by Barr and Rosen. You probably saw online in social media the the guy who, what was it? There's been more than one person who has licked a toilet seat and other things. Well, there was one particular guy. He's got COVID-19 now. And it also looks like that guy, if I read things right early this morning when I was still not into my first cup of coffee, he's also got a terrorism charge hanging over his head. So, like I said earlier, if you think it's somehow funny to go into a public place and spread your germs, because if you've got the coronavirus and you're a moron, if you think it's funny to go spread your germs around so other people will get sick and you're caught, then you could be charged with terrorism. This is not, we're not playing games anymore, people. We're not playing games. And that guy who posted the video of himself licking packages in the drugstore, he thinks he's clever, but he's actually an idiot. Because the internet is forever. Someone will identify him, even if he's made it, even if he's been very careful about covering his identity, which he wasn't. People will identify you, and you will be caught. Listen, people are identified from blurry security camera video, and they're caught by the police. If you think you're going to be funny and do something stupid like this, and that nobody's going to catch you, then honestly, you're a bigger idiot than there are words to describe in polite company. We live in a society today, and with a growing segment that believes it is smarter than everybody else, and they ignore everybody else, because especially adults, older people, are stupid. We saw this example at spring break. Now, it's spring break this week for some people, last week for other people. Depends on where you are and the school systems and such and how they take their breaks. But we saw on the beaches on the Gulf Coast, all of these students, these people who were there for spring break, drinking and doing crazy things on the beach and socializing and spreading germs around. And now we find that these people, a lot of them are back home and they're infected. But in their brains, they've been programmed by the leftist progressive education system to believe that anyone over a certain age is an idiot because they can't identify with them and don't understand what their life is like. And so when those people, particularly people in positions of authority, say, hey, don't do that, it could be dangerous, they shake their heads and say, yeah, whatever, boomer, and just keep on doing whatever they want to do. And now we see the consequences, because they've been lied to by progressivism.
We know that we're asking Americans to do a lot right now. So we're asking everyone to be selfless for others so that we can protect those who are most susceptible to this virus.
A question I often get asked is, why should young people care about the spread of coronavirus? Well, we know that people with underlying medical conditions over the age of 60 are at highest risk, but they've got to get it from somebody.
Social distancing is really physical separation of people.
It's what we refer to when we ask people to stay at least 6 feet apart.
Not going to bars, not going to restaurants, not going to theaters where there are a lot of people. It all just means physical separation so that you have a space between you and others who might actually be infected or infect you.
We all have a role to play in preventing person-to-person spread of this disease, which can be deadly for vulnerable groups. For more information on how you can social distance, please go to coronavirus.gov.
Marsha, Marsha, Marsha!
But she's not here. That's down the hall. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here with you. Good to have you along. It is the Thursday edition of the podcast, the 26th day of March, 2020. And honestly, if you're looking for anything to talk about in the news besides COVID-19, the coronavirus, then you're out of luck. There's really not much to talk about because that's what's going on. My wife and I, my wife Jane, sweetest woman in the world, we had a little excursion when she got home from work yesterday, and we had to go to the bank and put a deposit in, and the trip was interesting. It was very interesting. She decided that she wanted to go pick something up to take home to eat, and so we did that, and we went to the bank, and we, you know, used the night drop and put the deposit in, and the whole trip over and the whole trip back, I made it a point to go through places. Well, on the way back, I made it a point to go through areas that normally would be traffic nightmares. And it was smooth sailing all the way. Empty parking lots everywhere. And I remarked to Jane that driving around last night, and I say last night, it's not late. It was 6-ish. Maybe 6:30 or so. Between 6 and 6:30, we, between 6 and 7, we drove around, and I told Jane, this looks like the traffic on a Christmas day. You know how on Christmas day, when you, when you're going to get together with other family for Christmas, a Christmas meal, and you go over to so-and-so's house, and, you know, and everybody sits down, and they, there's a big spread, and you get in the car and you drive to the other place, and there's nobody else on the road. You just see, there are a few cars, and that's about it. You don't see much. There are just not that many people on the road. That's what it looked like yesterday. It looked like Christmas Day. And it was very, very strange. Very strange indeed. As I described it to Scott yesterday, to Scott Dawson, when we were doing the podcast yesterday, I said, looking at the way things were on the road, the fact that there was just nobody out, big parking lots empty, it was very apocalyptically strange. And it kind of wigs you out a bit when you see this happening. It's a very strange thing to see. And we're going through this. I keep saying, look at the numbers. I don't think the numbers justify the panic. I just don't. Because when you look at the numbers, I'm pulling the numbers up right now, in fact. Let's see, we're retrieving data here. We're retrieving data there. What are we doing? Is this right? Let me refresh that one more time. But it just, I don't think the numbers justify it. 10 years ago, with H1N1, there were a whole lot of people who came down with many more people came down with the swine flu, and so we didn't have this kind of panic. It was very strange. Very strange indeed. Very weird. I just don't understand how it happened, how this happened, except, as I've said before, that I think there are those who are taking advantage of this, because you never let a crisis go to waste. I think the news media is being sensational because the news media thrives on sensationalism. And I think politicians are taking advantage because that benefits them. Well, there is an expert who is saying now, the expert's name is Ira Longini, a leading epidemiologist. This expert is estimating the peak of deaths from the coronavirus in the United States will be in about 3 weeks. And it could possibly lead to a partial lifting of shelter-in-place directives. That would allow many people to return to work. Longini is a professor at the University of Florida, advising the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Longini says, I would guess the U.S. will hit a peak in deaths in the next 2 to 3 weeks, as the doubling time seems to be about 2 to 3 days. Maybe a partial lifting of the shelter in place for these those less vulnerable may make some sense in about 3 weeks, but by then, much of the damage will have been done. The timetable would generally fit the one outlined by President Donald Trump, who has said he would like to get the economy back open by the Easter holiday on April 12th. Longini was asked about the risk when the virus circulated again in the following weeks. He said if it were limited and we continued to protect the most vulnerable, that may be acceptable for now. We can also keep an eye on China as they begin to relax restrictions there. Now, that I differ with, because you can't trust anything coming out of China now. William Schaffner, an infectious disease specialist at Vanderbilt University, said the U.S. could reach the peak in 3 to 6 weeks. He said, my notions are harmonious in that I also anticipate the next 3 to 6 weeks will be critical here in the United States. So it appears that we are close to turning the corner, at least according to a couple of experts who are looking at the stats. But we're also seeing bad reporting. We're seeing fear-mongering. We're seeing actually what I see as unforgivable behavior on the part of the news media. Dr. Deborah Birx, that is, who is part of the task force, the coronavirus, White House coronavirus task force, she's the response coordinator, said during a press conference yesterday, the media has frightened the American people with salacious reporting surrounding the coronavirus outbreak. Her remarks came after leftist talking heads like Chris Hayes at MSNBC claimed that the coronavirus could kill 1% of the U.S. population. That's over 3.2 million people. 3.2 million people. Wow. Let's look at the current numbers, U.S. 1,037. That's 1,037. 10 new in the last 24 hours. But what does he say? He says 3.2 million. Birx says, we've done some things that are horizontal across the country, but we're collecting data now in a county-by-county granular way. So it's like any epidemic. It's not equal everywhere. There are places that are very sparse and places where there is more. We have a very vast country with a lot of capacity and a lot of infrastructure. If you do these projections, when you got to those projections that said, like in Germany and others, that implied that 60 or 50% of the population would get infected, I want to be very clear that the only way this happens is that this virus remains continuously moving through populations in this cycle, in the fall cycle, and another cycle. That's through three cycles with nothing being done. We're dealing with cycle A right now, not one that could come in the fall of 2020 and that we're getting prepared for by the innovations that are being worked on, and not the 2021 cycle. We're really dealing with the here and now while we're planning for the future. And I think the numbers that have been put out there are actually very frightening to people. But I can tell you, if you go back and look at Wuhan and Hubei and all of these provinces, when they talk about 60,000 people being infected, even if you said, all right, well, there's asymptomatics and all of that, so you get to 600,000 people out of 80 million, 600,000 people out of 80 million. That's nowhere close to the numbers that you see people putting out there. I think it's frightened the American people. Now, CNN was putting out some of this stuff, and CNN refused to air her speaking during this press conference. And they repeatedly cut away when she and Vice President Mike Pence spoke. Now, why would CNN, CNN, the most trusted name in news, wait a minute, the most trusted name in news, why would CNN do that? Because CNN has been tasked with torpedoing a presidency, that's why. The guy in charge has told the people it's all about impeachment, it's all about destroying Trump. They don't want the people to hear the truth. They don't want the people to know the facts, what's really going on. They don't want more information. They want less information. They only want the information which confirms their position on things. That's why CNN wouldn't tell viewers about something like this. And I got to tell you, that's just one more reason you can't trust the progressive press. I know I'm like a broken record on this, but the progressive press isn't some noble institution speaking truth to power. The progressive press sees everything through the lens of progressivism. CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS. The mainstream media in the news departments see things through the lens of progressivism. They choose not to believe the truth. Because it doesn't serve their purposes, they prefer not to believe it, and so it must not be true. I know that sounds insane, but that's how things are today. So you cannot trust the mainstream press, and you have to go seeking information elsewhere. And when you do, you'll see all kinds of information and all kinds of ideas and all kinds of opinions and all kinds of conspiracy theories. But it won't take you long to get a good gut for what's right and what's not right. I suggest you get out there and develop that gut and do it today.
What are you, turning into some kind of feminist?
Why do you ask? Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective, diving into the final segment for this Thursday, the 26th of March, 2020. I'm just kind of scanning through news here. There's a story. I don't mean to laugh, but there's a story about a guy who got eaten because he broke the stay-at-home order, went out to go fishing. He was eaten by a crocodile. This happened in Africa, so he went to fishing along the Nyanborongo River, and while he was out there, he got killed and eaten by a crocodile. And I think, are we desperate for news now? Can I just say that? Are we desperate for news? Because if this hadn't been this particular situation, if there hadn't been the lockdown, I would suggest to you this would have happened anyway. Maybe not to this guy, but somebody would have. Because, okay, this is me watching too much TV. Have you ever seen the TV show River Monsters? Yeah, there's this guy who fishes the world. He literally travels around the world following stories of people being killed by fish. I know that sounds weird. Okay, think piranha, think things like that. And there are some large fish that live in freshwater in rivers around the world. Large. In America, there are sturgeon. Go look up sturgeon and see how big they get, okay? And there are other fish like that. There are gars, things like that in America. Well, in rivers around the world, there are big fish. And from time to time, people get tripped up by them and they end up dying in one way or another. Or they fall into waters with predatory fish like piranha and other types of fish like piranha. And then also along those same lines, from time to time, he has uncovered what people said were some big mysterious monster that lives in this particular river or this particular lake. It turns out it was gators or crocodiles. And so this kind of stuff happens on a regular basis. So I think we're desperate for news now. So tip of the hat to the Blaze. You're looking for time, looking for stuff to fill your space with. This guy probably would have gone out to fish in a dangerous place anyway. I'm just saying. Okay, let's get back to a real coronavirus story. Yes, here we go. It's more COVID-19 news. As U.S. and state and local officials halt the economy and quarantine their communities over the Wuhan virus crisis, one would hope our leaders were making such major directions or decisions based on well-sourced data and statistical analysis. But it turns out this is probably not the case. A scan of statements made by media, state governors, local leaders, county judges, and more show many relying on the same source, an online mapping tool called COVID Act Now. The website says it is, quote, built to enable political leaders to quickly make decisions in their coronavirus response informed by the best available data and modeling. An interactive map provides users with catastrophic forecasts for each state should they wait to implement COVID Act Now's suggested strict measures to flatten the curve. But a closer look at how many of COVID Act Now's predictions have already fallen short and how they became a ubiquitous resource across the country overnight suggests something more sinister. When Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins announced a shelter-in-place order on Dallas County this past Sunday, he displayed a COVID Act Now graphs. He displayed graphs by COVID Act Now with predictive outcomes after 3 months if certain drastic measures are taken. The NBC Dallas affiliate also embedded the COVID Act Now models in their story on the mandate. The headline of an NBC Oregon affiliate featured COVID Act Now data and a headline blaring, "Coronavirus model sees Oregon hospitals overwhelmed by mid-April." Both the Oregonian and the East Oregonian also published stories featuring the widely shared data predicting a point of no return. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer cited COVID Act Now when telling her state they would exceed 7 million cases in Michigan, with 1 million hospitalized and 460,000 deaths if the state did nothing. A local CBS report in Georgia featured an Emory University professor urging Governor Brian Kemp with the same point of no return language and COVID Act Now models. The models are being shared across social media, news reports, and finding their way into officials' daily decisions, which is concerning because COVID Act Now's predictions have already been proven to be wildly wrong. COVID Act Now predicted that by March 19th, the state of Tennessee could expect 190 hospitalizations of patients with confirmed Wuhan virus. By March 19th, they only had 15. In New York, COVID Act Now claimed nearly 5,400 New Yorkers would have been hospitalized by March 19th. The actual number of hospitalizations is around 750. The site also claimed that nearly 13,000 New York hospitalizations by March 23rd. The actual number, around 2,500. In Georgia, COVID Act Now predicted 688 hospitalizations by March 23rd. By that date, they had around 800 confirmed cases in the whole state and fewer than 300 hospitalized. In Florida, COVID Act Now predicted that by March 19th, the state would face 400 hospitalizations. On March 19th, Governor Ron DeSantis said 90 people in Florida had been hospitalized. COVID Act Now's models in other states, including Oklahoma and Virginia, were also far off in their predictions. Jordan Satchel, a national security writer, said COVID Act Now's modeling comes from one team based at Imperial College London that is not only highly scrutinized but has a track record of bad predictions. Jessica Hamzalu, at New Scientist, notes the systematic errors researchers and scientists have found with the modeling COVID Act Now relies on, saying Chen Shen at the New England Complex Systems Institute, a research group in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and his colleagues argue that the Imperial team's model is flawed and contains incorrect assumptions. They point out that the Imperial team's model doesn't account for the availability of tests or the possibility of super spreader events at gatherings and has other issues. Among other issues, COVID Act Now lists the known limitations of their model. Here are a few that seem especially alarming, considering they generate a model for each individual state. First, many of the inputs into this model, hospitalization rate, are based on early estimates that are likely to be wrong. Demographics, populations, and hospital bed counts are outdated. Demographics for the USA as a whole are used rather than specific to each state. The model doesn't adjust for the population density, culturally determined interaction frequency and closeness, humidity, temperature, etc. in calculations. This is not a node-based analysis and thus assumes everyone spreads the disease at the same rate. In practice, there are some folks who are super spreaders and others who are almost isolated. So, why is this organization or seemingly innocent online mapping tool using inaccurate algorithms to scaremonger leaders into tanking the economy? Politics, of course. Founders of this site include Democratic Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins and three Silicon Valley tech workers and Democratic activists, Zachary Rosen, Max Henderson, and Igor Kaufman, who are all also donors to various Democratic campaigns and political organizations since 2016. Henderson and Kaufman donated to the Hillary Clinton campaign in 2016, while Rosen donated to the Democratic National Committee, recently resigned Democratic Representative Katie Hill, and other Democratic candidates. Prior to building the COVID Act Now website, Kaufman created an online game designed to raise $1 million for the eventual 2020 Democratic candidate and defeat President Trump. That game's website is now defunct. Perhaps the goal of COVID Act Now was never to provide accurate information, but to scare citizens and government officials into implementing rash and draconian measures. The creators even admit as much, with the caveat that, quote, this model is designed to drive fast action, not predict the future, end quote. They generated this model under the guise of protecting communities from overrun hospitals, a trend that is not on track to happen as they predicted. Not only is the data false and looking more incorrect with each passing day, but the website is optimized for a disinformation campaign. A social media share button prompts users to share their models and alarming graphs on Facebook and Twitter with the autofill text, quote, this is the point of no return for intervention to prevent this hospital system from being overloaded by coronavirus. That dawning phrase, point of no return, is the same talking point being repeated by government officials justifying their shelter-in-place orders and filling local news headlines. So, Democrat donors, political activists, are behind this website spreading false information being repeated by government officials and the liberal press. It's one of those things that makes you go, doesn't it? And that's all for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.